to tonight's Issue 2 Community Forum. Tonight's event is sponsored by The Courier, WFIN Radio, and the Findlay branch of the American Association of University Women of Ohio.
Responsible for proposing this law have a direct and personal stake in defending the law, requiring the state to pay partitioners reasonable attorney fees and other expenses, require the petitioners to pay $10,000 to the state if the law is held by a court to be unenforceable, and limit petitioners' personal liability to that amount, requiring the Attorney General to defend the law if it is challenged in court. And then at the bottom of this section, simply the question posed to the voters, shall the proposed law be adopted, yes or no? That, in essence, is the law that is going to appear, as it will appear on the ballot. We are very pleased this evening to have with us two very knowledgeable speakers on this issue. As you surmise, they are on two different sides of the question. Dale Butland has 35 years of professional experience in politics, government, and communications. For nearly two decades, he has worked for the late U.S. Senator and astronaut John Glenn in a variety of positions. And for the past 16 years, he has operated his own strategic communications consulting firm, Butland and Associates. He will be telling you more, I'm sure, about his background as he is making his presentation. Dale Butland, those are his credentials. And our other speaker is David Little. David's educational background is from Northern Kentucky University. He has a Bachelor of Science degree in political science. He is a student of international relations from the University of Cincinnati. He is the recipient of honors and recognitions with regard to both writing and speaking, including the Outstanding Young Man of America, the Cincinnati Neighborhood Poet Laureate, having published poetry in the Greater Cincinnati area, the Greater Cincinnati Writers League, and is a guest lecturer for multiple universities, seminars, public and private schools. The present affiliations that he has include the National Urban League, the United States Foreign Policy Association, the NAACP, the Public Relations Society of America, and the Greater Cincinnati World Affairs Council. Both men are eminently qualified for this evening's presentation. I would like to just very briefly mention a few guidelines for tonight's presentation so that you as audience members will be aware that we have done our best to make this a fair and impartial educational opportunity for all who attend. In fairness to all speakers, there will be 2-minute opening statements made by each side. The proponents will speak first, and then there will be 8-minute presentations by each side, further elaborating their positions on this issue. Then there will be a 2-minute rebuttal period for each side, with the proponent speaking first. And finally, 3-minute closing statements by each side. We are suggesting that no new constructive arguments be introduced during the period of rebuttal. The moderator will preside, opening the debate and question and answer period, keeping order, and assuring that the debaters are staying on topic and abiding by the rules. Issue 2 is the sole focus of this forum. Participants are reminded to refrain from personal statements or other conduct unbefitting the citizens of Findlay and Hancock County and the quality of this issue. So we will proceed with presentation by our first speaker.
Thank you for that kind introduction. The vanity in me is more than proud, and I can't wait to tell my wife that I was introduced as a poet. Because that is most certainly a part of my inner being, and one of which I'm proud, but one of which I did not imagine it would occur this evening. I am also, like Dale, a very much of a political beast. Upon graduating from college, my first job was running a congressional campaign. Dale and I are both Democrats. We have both worked on wide variety of things. We just happen to find ourselves on opposite sides in this venture. So I'm pleased to be here this evening representing the affirmative, the yes side, for issue 2. When they called me and said, would you be interested in discussing working on this issue, I said, well, let's talk about it. I said, lay out the guidelines. And when I figured out that I was going to get to work against the high prices and the bad practices of the pharmaceutical industry, I immediately said, sign me up. Because all my life, that's exactly the kind of battle I want to take on. Because I fight for underdogs. I fight for people that have been wronged. I stand up for the small guy and the person that has been abused. That is my reason to be in political life. So I look upon this as fitting my personality and my personal belief system just perfectly. Many of you are here because you, I got 20 seconds. This is going to be tough. Many of you are here, and the major word I'll hear from you is that I'm confused. I would simply tell you you're confused because that is the money that Big Pharma's advertising can buy. Confusion. And I will, this is to be continued. Thank you.
Well, good evening. You know, everyone agrees that Ohioans need access to drugs they can afford, but nearly every expert who has studied issue 2 says it won't fix the problem and will only make things worse by actually raising drug costs for most Ohioans and reducing access to needed medicines for some of our most vulnerable people. Now, these experts include a former state budget director, 3 former Medicaid directors who served under both Democratic and Republican governors, and more than 80 organizations representing veterans, business, labor, and over 30,000 Ohio doctors, nurses, pharmacists, and hospitals. And every major newspaper in this state that has taken a position has also come out against issue 2. Now, at this debate, I'll try to explain why issue 2 is unworkable, why it won't save money for taxpayers or lower costs for consumers. But facts typically aren't what the yes side wants to talk about. From them, particularly in their TV ads, you've mostly heard anger. Anger about drug prices, anger about drug companies, and anger about those who run them. They'll tell you to ignore the experts, ignore the doctors, the nurses, the veterans, and all those newspaper editorials. The yes side wants you to ignore the facts and to vote your anger instead. But voting out of anger can be dangerous. And cutting off your nose to spite your face always has ugly consequences. So listen carefully to what both sides say this evening and then ask yourself 3 simple questions. Is issue two more likely to lower or raise drug costs for you and your family? Would it likely increase or reduce your access to needed medicines? And is issue two likely to save money for taxpayers or cost you millions more than you're paying now? Yes, we all need access to affordable drugs, but issue two isn't the answer. In fact, it's a prescription for disaster.
Okay, I can relax a little bit. Well, I'll tell you, I recognize Dale's remarks. I heard them exactly that way. I knew what he was going to say before he said it. I didn't finish mine until I was in my hotel room this afternoon, because I'm a thinking person, and the dynamics are changing. So I'll try and speak from my heart. I don't have a precise canned speech. But one thing he said there that is absolutely deceiving, and I'll just refer to just one part of it. He refers to this huge coalition as if they know everything. But most of them are lobbying groups who look down upon the state capitol, who are insiders, who have been making decisions on your behalf and mostly to your disadvantage for decades. And when he spoke of these three Medicaid directors, do not be deceived. Three former Medicaid directors all wrote reports. Guess who paid for the reports? The pharmaceutical industry. And guess what the report said? The report said exactly what they wanted them to say. That is not honest, and it is not a reflection of accuracy or policy that should be adopted by the state of Ohio. Yes, we want to talk about the issue, and if you're not angry about pharmaceutical prices, you better wake up. Take a look at what we found out just in the last 24 hours. I don't agree with President Trump about too many things, but right before I came in here, my brother called me on the phone from California. He goes, wow, that 60 Minutes Washington Post report really woke him up. Not only do we have all of a sudden legislation introduced this morning, and all of a sudden Senator Manchin from West Virginia, whose daughter just conveniently made about $20 million a year, hyping up the price of EpiPen 600%. If you're not angry about that kind of thing, if you're not angry about Big Pharma shipping 9 million pills to a small town in West Virginia of 320 people, if you can't figure out the criminality in that, if you can't figure out the immorality in that, then you go vote against issue two. Because that is exactly what they want you to do. If you don't understand being angry about what is being done to Ohio and rural areas and communities all across this state, then why are you here as concerned citizens? I've been to 120 newspapers across the state this summer and this fall. Never did I hear one editor with whom I met, including your own, defend the drug companies' pricing or defend their practices, or did I ever hear them say anything other than the opiate crises and the heroin crises that followed in its pathway, like Hansel and Gretel finding their way home. There's a reason the pharmaceutical industry made $711 billion in the last decade. There's a reason. Ask AARP. You know, pretty down the mainstream, they're still trying to sign me up, and I'm resisting. But they say that drug prices for major pharmaceuticals have gone up 204%. If you haven't felt that in your daily life, you're being shielded by a system that is paying your freight, but you're paying on the back end. And as a taxpayer, every time Ohio has to meet those incredible high prices and pay for pharmaceuticals, you as a taxpayer are getting the bill. That's what this issue two is about. It says the state of Ohio should get the same break as the Veterans Administration gets. Key concept, negotiate. You heard all the rules for this debate? You think there wasn't negotiation going on there? Do you think they didn't negotiate with me when I was going to get here, how long I was going to talk, where it was going to be? Of course. It's as American as apple pie. Pretty basic. So the idea that a federal agencies and state agencies cannot negotiate prices, truly un-American. If there's an Asian restaurant here somewhere in town, this guy goes out and he buys his rice in bulk. Am I right? And some of you shop at Sam's Club and go to Costco because you buy something in bulk, something you like. And guess what? You get a cheaper price as a result. Why in the world is it possible that in Ohio and across the country, we do not get reduced rates here? A couple little facts. United States, same drugs, we pay 3 to 5 times as much as any other country in the world. Check the record. France, England, Germany, Italy, pick your country. Canada. Why is it you know grandmothers who have gone to Canada to fulfill their prescription? That's ridiculous. I know people that have gone to Mexico on vacation in order to fulfill prescriptions. These companies designed the top 26 drugs sold in the United States, 25 of them with federal government help, and now they want us to pay ungodly amounts more than anyone else in the world. It's obscene. It's wrong, and it impacts our economy, it impacts all of our pocketbooks, and it is impacting Ohio taxpayers. That's why Issue 2, if it acted and we were able to negotiate on behalf of the citizens, which is all we're asking, negotiate on behalf of the citizens, save at least $400 million a year, those monies could be transferred for use someplace else. They could come back directly to you, but I would venture to say that we've got a heck of a bill coming up for the opiate crises that the pharmaceutical industry started. You know, these are the same people that told you, and this came out in this report last night. I challenge all of you to go look at the 60 Minutes report last night, to go look at the Washington Post report last night. Breathtaking in its scope. Big Pharma spent $40.8 million to force the DEA to back off on enforcing laws against the spread of OxyContin and other opiates, to slow down the killing of the pill mills that went crazy in Ohio. So the idea that we can't fight back, that Ohio can't stand up and send a message to the Congress, to the federal government, and most certainly to all the other states that Big Pharma can be defeated, and it starts here. Thank you.
Well, I should start by telling you that I am not the poet laureate of Cincinnati or any other place, but let me try this. Roses are red, violets are blue. Don't make a mistake and vote for issue 2. What do you think? All right, maybe not so good. So before I get into my presentation, let me make just a couple of comments on a few things that David said. First, David tried to minimize the 80 different groups that we have in our coalition by labeling them all lobbying groups. These are all just lobbying groups. You folks have doctors and nurses, pharmacists that you deal with on a regular basis. Those folks look out for you. Those people care about you for the most part. And I'm sure you think so too. And I think it's really unfair to try to tar them all as just lobbyists who are not out for your best interest. He also talked about the Medicaid directors who wrote the report that I mentioned to you. These are Medicaid directors who served under both Democratic and Republican governors. And he said, oh, you can't believe what they say, because they just got paid to do that report. Let me say, first of all, not a single doctor or nurse or anybody else who has appeared in any ad that we've run has gotten paid a penny. Nobody. The Medicaid directors, it is true, were paid for their time in doing this long study, which took them months to do. But nobody told them what to write or what to find. And these are folks who have devoted their careers, and I know them all, they've devoted their careers to helping the poorest among us get decent drugs and the drugs they need. And I think sliming them in that fashion is inappropriate as well. But most important of all is what David told you when he said, you know, issue two would only require Ohio to negotiate. What's wrong with that? Well, it's once again demonstrates the fundamental misunderstanding and misstatement of what issue two does. Issue two does not say Ohio has a right to negotiate. Ohio already does negotiate, which I'll get to in a moment. What issue two says is that the state would be prohibited from buying any drug for which they paid more than the lowest price paid by the VA. Okay? And I'm going to get to why that's so important. And the last thing is that I want to comment on is David's comment about the opioid crisis and the 60 Minutes report, which many of you may have seen last night. I watched it myself, found it very, very disturbing. Of course, most of that was not about the drug companies. That was about the distribution companies, McKesson, Cardinal Health, and so on, not the actual drug makers. But beyond that, what they always want to talk about are things that Issue 2 doesn't do. They never want to talk about the things it actually would do. And not one word in Issue 2 is about the opioid crisis. Not one word. There's nothing about treatment, addiction, controlling illegal street drugs, or anything else having to do with opioids. So don't be misled on that either. All right, now, let me talk a little bit about, let me get to some facts here as to what's wrong with Issue 2. Number one, it is unworkable and it is unimplementable. Why is that? Because it says that the state of Ohio could only pay the equal to or less than the lowest price paid by the VA. Now, the VA gets a 24% federally mandated discount, but that's not their lowest price. Because in addition to that 24% mandated discount they get from Congress, the VA negotiates additional discounts and rebates with the pharmaceutical companies. But those voluntary discounts, the terms of those, are private contracts, and it's not publicly known. The state budget director last week had to put out a report, which is required by law to do, to give the fiscal impact of Issue 2 if it were to pass. And as he said in his report, and I've got a copy of it here, any of you can read it for yourselves, we can't know what the lowest price is that the VA pays because those additional discounts are not publicly available. The other thing that Issue 2 misunderstands is the difference between the VA, the way the VA and the state of Ohio buy drugs. Okay, the VA buys drugs in en masse. They buy huge quantities of drugs, which they take possession of and store in huge warehouses. Then they distribute those drugs through pharmacies and a mail order program that they, the VA, run themselves. So their distribution costs are extremely low, and whatever distribution costs they have are not included in what they pay to the pharmaceutical company for the drug. You follow me on this now? Because remember, Ohio could only pay the lowest price the VA pays for the drug. Okay? Ohio is very different. We don't own pharmacies. We don't own drugs. Medicaid, which is the largest program, accounts for 75% of the drugs Ohio buys, is an insurance program, just like any other insurance program. Medicaid recipient goes to his or her doctor, they get a script, they go to the pharmacy, they fill the script. Medicaid then, the state, reimburses the pharmacist for the cost of the drug. But under Issue 2, the pharmacist won't be able to buy the drug from the manufacturer at the VA price. And what happens when the pharmacist buys the drug for, let's say, a dollar a pill, just to keep it simple, but the VA's lowest price is 75 cents a pill? That's all Ohio could pay to the pharmacist. if issue two passed. So the pharmacist would lose a quarter, in this example, on every single prescription he filled for Medicaid, which means it's not long until he drops out of the program and ceases to be a Medicaid provider. Now, why should you care about that? Because when pharmacists drop out, and roughly half of the pharmacists in this state who serve Medicaid patients are independent pharmacists. They're not the big boys. They're not the CVSs and the Walmarts and so on. They're the small independent pharmacists. And in many, particularly rural areas of the state, there's only one pharmacy in the whole place, and it's the family-owned one. There isn't a Walmart there. And if that pharmacist stops serving Medicaid recipients, then those people aren't going to be able to get their drugs. Maybe they'll be able to get them, but it's going to be very, very inconvenient. They're going to have to go to another town to get them. And oftentimes these independent pharmacies deliver where the big boys don't. So if you're homebound, if you're very, ill, elderly, you can get the drugs delivered to your home. So the pharmacists are the ones who get it in the neck. It's not the drug companies. The drug companies will continue to sell their drugs at whatever prices they negotiate. It's the pharmacists who are going to get in the neck, and that's why the Pharmacists Association is part of the No Coalition. But even if this were workable, it still wouldn't cut your drug costs, and here's why. Let me see a show of hands. How many people in this room tonight have private insurance, insurance provided by your employer or your spouse's employer, if that's how you get it, or if you're a senior, if you're on Medicare, or have no insurance at all, or are a veteran who gets your drugs through the VA? Let's see a show of hands. If you fit any of those categories, take a look around. None of you is included under Issue 2 because it only applies to drugs purchased by the state government. If you don't get your drugs through a state government program, you aren't covered. And I'm going to come back to some other problems with this thing in a bit.
It does cover 3.9 million Ohioans. It doesn't help David Little, but it does help David Little as a taxpayer. It would help each of you as a taxpayer because the state is saving money. In regards to a couple of these other things, in this 60-minute report, he said that was just the distributors. They had nothing to do with the manufacturers of Big Pharma. Let's get serious. Who do you think provides these drugs to the distributors? Don't you think any of you business people, you know how much you sell and to who? Don't be deluded. And the idea that Dale left out the fact, it's in the Washington Post this morning, 40.8 million on this lobbying campaign alone. Do not say they don't have dirty, sticky fingers on the opioid crisis, and don't say that behavior should not be punished and restricted. And Ohio is a good place to start. We also have family doctors. We have the family physicians in Ohio. We have the largest nurses group in the United States. And we have Attorney General DeWine suing some of the top five, including the OxyContin Purdue industry, who is contributing to the opposition of this campaign. So the people that brought you OxyContin to Ohio and took all that money to their bank, they are bankrolling the opposition campaign. They helped pay for every piece of this literature, and every one of those ads was paid for with OxyContin profits. Check the record. It's clear. Also, the idea that we can't negotiate, we just can't see because things are not—they're not accountable and they're not transparent because we can't look at the bills. I would say that's part of the problem. There is no transparency.
With regard to whether we'd save money, because David said, "Well, okay, even if 2/3 of you, 7 million Ohioans, are left out of this because you don't get drugs through state programs, you're all going to benefit because hey, we're all taxpayers, right?" And they propound this ridiculous idea that pass issue two, you'll save $400 million. Nobody believes that. The state budget director, who I just mentioned, is not a part of our campaign. He is the state budget director, just came out with his report day before yesterday,
And he says that there will be, here's, I just happened to bring this newspaper headline with me.
This happens to be the Dayton Daily News.
I don't know if you could read it in the back. State sees no savings from issue two. Okay? Here's the reason. I told you Medicaid drugs, which account for 75% of the drugs we buy, already gets a 23.1% discount. Now, remember, under the VA is a 24% mandated discount.
So that's less than 1% difference right there. Plus, we negotiate the additional ones. And what the state budget director says is that for the vast majority of drugs Ohio buys, we're already getting as good as or better than the price paid by the VA. So this idea that we're going to save $400 million is preposterous. What the budget director said is that there will be no savings in Medicaid drugs. That accounts for 75%. And while some small savings in some other smaller programs is plausible, it is extremely unlikely, because he says for that to occur, then A, B, and C would have to happen. And then he says, but A, B, and C are almost certainly not going to happen. So there will be no savings from this. Last thing I wanted to say, and I don't speak for the pharmaceutical industry. I speak for the campaign. Pharma is one of our coalition members. I just got this as I was coming here. With regard to the recent Washington Post and 60 Minutes stories, this is Pharma, want to make clear that Pharma did not support or lobby in favor of ensuring the Patient Access and Effective Drug Enforcement Act, and reports that Pharma spent $40 million lobbying this bill are unequivocally false.
Well, if anyone believes that statement from the pharmaceutical industry today, I got some property way out in the desert. If anyone believes that the Washington Post in 60 Minutes told a big lie on Pharma last night, you're wrong. And Dale just said that pharmaceutical industry was somehow connected to this campaign. Gee, we got a lot of partners, a lot of coalition, a lot of great people. We just came here to, you know, these nurses were being abused and that small-town pharmacist was just going to get hurt. And, you know, if prices go down, we put a leash on the pharmaceutical industry, they're going to hurt somebody else, and they're holding veterans hostage and elderly people hostage, and who knows who they're going to hold hostage next time. Because the only people that can raise prices is them, and they've been doing that with regularity. And they did spend $40.8 million in lobbying campaign. And they are funding the opposition almost 100%. I would like to see the citizens who said, I really want to keep my drug prices high. I'm sending you a fat check to fight that bad issue too. Here's the story. You heard a lot of clutter deep down in here. It's because they don't want to talk about the big reality. I would liken it to a giant elephant standing here behind me. The elephant is the problem of which we're talking about. The fact is that everybody in America is upset about high drug prices. Gee whiz, Donald Trump and I disagree on everything until today, but now we're on the same side because he said that Pharma was ripping off America and that we were getting ripped off while other countries weren't paying their fair share. Check it today. It was a big press conference this afternoon. So here's the elephant. So Dale seems to want to talk about nothing about the elephant of the problem, but he wants you to get out a microscope and look at that little fly on the elephant's rear and examine that fly and look at the scintilla. There's my poetry word. Look at the scintilla of the fly's wing. Study the wing and see how many spots are on there, because they cannot defend what is now. They cannot defend that we're one of two countries in the world who advertises drugs, drives up profits. You can't watch anything. You can't watch anything without it. 80% of the opioids and pain medication in the world is consumed in the United States. They advertise to us, we self-diagnose, we self-medicate, and we are more addicted than anybody else, and it is their fault, and we are paying their pockets, padding their pockets as a result. Thank you.
We've made no secret of the fact that the pharmaceutical industry is funding most of this campaign, but let me tell you why. Right? Mr. Weinstein, Michael Weinstein, who's the controversial California healthcare CEO who is funding the other side, is on track to spend $20 million in this campaign. And as much as the doctors and the nurses and the pharmacists and the veterans and all the other organizations that are part of our coalition, as much as they oppose issue two, they simply don't have that kind of money lying around in their organizational checkbooks. So if the pharmaceutical industry were not willing to pay for most of the cost of this campaign, I'm not sure who else would or could. Once again, David wants to talk about things that have nothing to do with issue two. He'll tell you, well, we're one of only two countries in the world that allows advertising of drugs on television. Well, that's true. Whether we should or not is an interesting question and one that we can certainly debate. But issue two wouldn't stop us from doing that. That's why I say to you, most people understand that if we have a national problem, which I personally believe that high drug costs are part of a much larger issue we have around health care generally, national problems require national solutions and answers. You can't fix these things on a state-by-state piecemeal basis, and you certainly can't get to federal law through a state ballot initiative. So advertising has nothing that would not be affected by the passage of issue two. Sherrod Brown, Senator Brown, has some interesting stuff going on in Washington now around drug pricing. I'm told that he's getting some bipartisan traction with it. That ought to be the place that we should be looking. But once again, I come back to tell you, every expert who's looked at this, when you say drug costs are too high, I get that. I get that people are angry about drug costs. I get that you may even be angry about drug companies. But that is not on the ballot next month. Your anger, whatever you think about them, that's not on the ballot. What is on the ballot is a very specific piece of legislation that everyone, every expert who's looked at it says would redound to the detriment of our state and its people. So once again, I say to you, do not cut off your nose to spite your face. Do your research. Understand what this would do and not do. And vote accordingly.
Thank you both for your presentations, for making your positions clear and the rationale of those positions clear. And now for our audience, it's your turn. It is your turn to ask questions, raise issues, share views. We will give each speaker 2 minutes to respond to the questions that you raise. And who would like to have the first question? Yes.
I have a question about either gentleman.
I think it would help so that everyone can hear what
person talk a little bit louder.
To stand.
I don't think either gentleman's addressed on here, and I have question about on the yes side to say that we're going to pay legal fees. In layman's terms, to me it appears like it's an open checkbook. There's no cap on it. And even why are legal fees part of a drug issue that's on the ballot? I mean, that is my main concern about.
Fair question. Fair question. And it's probably the eyeball of that fly I'm talking about. The fact is that the law, as in any law, will be defended, and he's already said so, by our Attorney General, Mike DeWine. He said he will defend it. Potential next Attorney General, Yost, who is the Republican potential nominee, has already said he will vigorously defend issue two. But imagine this. Imagine if the people voted for something and then the legislature sat on their hands. And then the attorney general said, oh, gee, I don't feel like taking on my friends in the pharmaceutical industry. I'm not going to aggressively go after this. This is built in as a safeguard, and the idea that anyone is in here to get rich is nonsense. The word written into the ballot initiative that they love to talk about, reasonable, is there. It is reasonable, and the reasonable would be decided by the attorney general. So there should be no, if Big Pharma doesn't sue, and they've sued 70,000 times. They've already sued our campaign all the way to the Supreme Court and lost because they were terrified for this ballot initiative to get to the ballot itself. So they sued us then, and if we win, you should anticipate that Big Pharma will try to shut this down because they're terrified that this idea will spread like prairie wildfire across the United States.
I appreciate the question, sir. Now, David would have you believe that the legal fees provision is only going to kick in if the Attorney General doesn't do his job and defend the law. But that's not what the ballot initiative says. You can read it for yourself. What it says is that the Attorney General shall defend the law and gives these four sponsors of the ballot initiative, three of whom work for Mr. Weinstein, the California health care executive that we talked about earlier, gives them an unprecedented right to hire their own lawyers and to intervene in that lawsuit. Now, how that would operationally occur, I'm not quite sure. Would they sit next to the attorney general while he's doing his job? I don't know. But what we know is they have a right to hire their own lawyers in addition to the attorney general defendant, and you can read it for yourself. Now, why is this important? Mr. Weinstein is a serial litigator and really a legal bounty hunter. This guy has sued 52 government agencies in 7 different states, including 3 in Ohio. He sued the state of California twice to allow him to continue selling prescription drugs at a higher price than he should have. By the way, I should mention, Mr. Weinstein runs a foundation that makes 80% of its money selling prescription drugs, right? So he has sued 52 agencies in 7 different states, including 3 in Ohio. In fact, earlier this year, he sued the Ohio Department of Health because the Ohio Department of Health did not grant his outfit a contract that he thought he should get, even though his application for this actually was a grant application, even though the application was late, was full of mistakes, and so forth. So what I'm telling you is that to give this fellow and his lawyers a blank check without a cap or limit of any kind could get very expensive. And by the way, David, the only limit that is in this, you say it's reasonable. What's reasonable to a California lawyer may not be reasonable to Ohio taxpayers.
It's reasonable to the Attorney General of Ohio.
But I would also say, if I just finish this last point, the only limitation in this is the $10,000 cap that is put on Mr. Weinstein and his lawyers. That's all they have to pay if this thing turns out not to be sustainable. If $10,000 was a reasonable cap for Mr. Weinstein and his attorneys, David, why wasn't that also a reasonable cap for Ohio taxpayers? Why is our cap unlimited?
Do I have a rebuttal there, please?
He rebutted you. Now,
another question. The sponsor of the...
Each of you would have one opportunity to respond to the question so that we can get more questions in from the audience.
I'll see if I can work something in on Mr. Weinstein and my other answers.
Jillian, do you want to take questions here? Or what?
Yes.
Okay, well, they're raising their hands.
Yes, question. Question over here, I believe.
Jillian, have the person stand up so you can see.
Yes, yes. If you have a question, it will be a little bit easier to see. If you have a question and you would stand, I would appreciate it.
Sir, go ahead and stand up.
Yes.
Pointing to somebody else.
I thought so too.
That's all right. This gentleman first, and then the gentleman back there.
Why is Ohio the focus of all of this? Somebody in California, why Ohio?
I'll be happy to answer that.
Me too.
Each of you get your chance.
Is my time started yet?
Yeah. Right, hurry up.
Has it started yet?
Yes, it is.
The reason Ohio is chosen is because Michael Weinstein has three offices in the state of Ohio, 175 employees, 17,000 patients, part of a 15-state network. They have 755,000 patients around the world. It is the AIDS Healthcare Foundation. He is not a big CEO billionaire like they're talking on television. He makes $409,000 and operates in 36 countries all over Africa and drives an 8-year-old car, flies coach, and stays at the Residence Inn in Columbus. Hardly a big drug kingpin that he's been made out to be. The reason it's in Ohio is because Ohio is a bellwether. People listen to Ohio, and he has facilities in Ohio, and he has a stake in what occurs in Ohio. That's why we're here.
Mr. Weinstein had this same issue on the ballot last year in the state of California, where it went down by 6 points, and arguably the most progressive or liberal state in the nation. Why he came to Ohio is anybody's guess. I'm going to guess that one of the reasons may be Ohio is one of the states where you can get ballot issues on the ballot, and it's relatively easy to get it on the ballot here. Now, David will tell you, oh, he came to Ohio because he's got these facilities here. Well, David, well, just yesterday, the day before, I read where Mr. Weinstein is bringing this same campaign to South Dakota next year. Now, I don't think he's got any facilities in South Dakota, does
he?
I think
we're planning for the prairie fire.
Yeah, right. Yeah, right. That prairie fire. So let's talk about Mr. Weinstein for a minute. And I would tell you, I would not tell you that Mr. Weinstein has never done any good things. He has. But there's a, but before David canonizes him as Saint Michael, I think there's a dark side to Mr. Weinstein that some of you folks might want to know about as you're trying to decide who's telling the truth and who isn't about issue two. Here in Ohio, the Cleveland City Club and the Cleveland Clinic, one of the most prestigious institutions in the world, last week sent cease and desist letters to Mr. Weinstein's campaign for misrepresenting their position in campaign materials and implying that they supported issue two when, in fact, they don't. Earlier this year, Mr. Weinstein ran another campaign in California where the mayor of Los Angeles, Eric Garcetti, the L.A. County Sheriff's Office, and the Los Angeles Times newspaper all called Mr. Weinstein out by name for misrepresenting their positions and claiming that they were in support of another one of his ballot initiatives, which they weren't. So, and I'm not making this up. You can see it on our website. Some of the California officials who know Mr. Weinstein best have called him, and I'm quoting them directly, a bully and a thug. There is a dark side to Mr. Weinstein that I think you folks ought to know about as you decide who's telling the truth.
Yes, caring for AIDS patients all around the world is really creates a dark side, a dark man who takes care of nearly 750,000. Can we respond to that?
We're going to take another question.
I want to take the gentleman's question who stood up a moment ago.
This gentleman over here.
Yes, sir.
Thank you. When we came in this evening, we were handed what appears to be a voter's guide to the issue. And I'd like to ask our host this evening if she knows of an objective source that we can go to for some specific information. This is the first time I've actually seen the ballot language. I've seen little bits and pieces of it. And what appears to be the actual language to the ballot, and immediately below it, it says, issue two is costly, deceptive, and unworkable, which hardly seems like the objective kind of information that I'm looking for when I'm trying to figure out how to vote on a ballot initiative. Ma'am, do you know of any objective sources that we can go to get some information?
I would recommend the League of Women Voters.
I'm sorry. My question was not addressed to you, sir.
Sorry.
To our host.
While I am not by any sense of the imagination, an expert on resources of issue two. I do believe that the League of Women Voters.
Thank you.
The League of Women Voters has information on its website with regard to this issue. And I believe that they, like AAUW, have not taken a position, pro or con, with respect to this issue. And therefore, the information that the League provides on its website would be objective information that might be helpful to you.
Thank you very much.
If I may just add one thing to that, I'm not going to tell you about our campaign, sir. What I'm going to tell you is that a lot of people think that their local newspapers can be trusted to investigate something independently and to come to a judgment. What I will tell you is there are 9 major daily newspapers in the state that have taken a position thus far. I have a suspicion there will be 3 more in the next week. Every single one of them has come out against it. And if you want to know why, all you got to do is go to their websites and you can read their editorials as to why they are suggesting you vote no.
Thank you for the rebuttal. That piece of literature obviously is meant to be incredibly deceiving, just like several of the other things that the gentleman has just said were deceiving. Big Pharma spent $122 million in California to defeat a similar issue on this subject. And there were 27 ballot initiatives in California at the time, so it was like trying to play center field with 50 batters at the plate. Also, to say that Mr. Weinstein is somehow litigious when your client has sued everybody in sight, including every state and the federal government repeatedly, at least 70,000 times, and already sued our campaign here in Ohio, is ridiculous. And as to the Cleveland City Club, the head of the Cleveland Clinic speaking about his rising drug cost in a public forum that is broadcast and that is information about it is distributed all over the place. I've written speeches for people to give at the Cleveland City Club, and trust me, they want that information disseminated. Because all we do was quote the person that said something in the context of the Cleveland City Club. At no point was it pretending that he was an endorsee. He simply said what the cost of drugs was doing to health care at the Cleveland Clinic. That is the truth.
And, of course, that's not what the Cleveland Clinic says, because they say that unless they send a mailer out taking down what they did, they're going to sue them. But be that as it may, the last point I want to make with regard to California, David will have you believe, well, the only reason this went down in California is that the drug company spent all this money to beat it. What he forgot to tell you, every single major newspaper in the state of California, every single one, from liberal papers like the L.A. Times and the San Francisco Chronicle to middle-of-the-road and conservative papers, every single major daily newspaper editorialized against Issue 2. So I don't think that the drug companies were able to buy the editorial pages. Were they, David?
You'll have to ask them.
Well, let me make a quick point. I'm Carl Heminger, the publisher of The Courier, and a real quick sidebar, that we have not taken an editorial position, an endorsement on this issue yet. We are here tonight the same way you are, to listen to their discussion, your questions. Sarah, our reporter, is here with follow-up questions, and we're asking the same questions you are, and then we'll come out of this and see if we can make a decision based on the thoughts that we understand them to be. So we're here in the same way you are, neutral at this point, trying to learn, and I would imagine at some point we probably will take a position. So, yes, ma'am.
Mr. Heminger, rather than have the actual wording of the issue in the paper, we need to read that.
I don't know when it will come. It comes from the Secretary of State, and that's a good question of when that will be coming, so in what format we'll do that. So,
website now.
I'm sure it is, but we'll have it as an insert in the paper, too, so you can read it. So that'll be coming. So, and it's unfortunate it's coming now because early voting is going on. So, but it is available, as Nancy said, on the Secretary of State's website. So, and I would imagine it's probably on the local Board of Election website, too. So, yeah.
I have a question for the people
people against issue two? Does Big Pharma spend any money advertising in any of those major newspapers that are endorsing your position?
I believe the answer is no.
They don't buy ads for drugs ever in any of the newspapers, ever?
I do not believe that they buy any, if they have bought any ads in any of the Ohio papers. California, I can't tell you. But I do not believe they bought any ads in Ohio papers.
I find that difficult to
recognize. But in any event, if you're suggesting that if they buy an ad, that that's going to lead the editorial page to editorialize in a certain way, I think maybe Mr. Hemmer would have something to say about that, because a lot of people advertise in his paper, too, and I'm not sure that sways their editorial point of view.
The answer to your question is clearly yes. Not only that, they have this really good feel-good campaign. And I've seen it in my Cincinnati paper twice. They buy two complete pages, and they have two young men. One is a cancer patient, and one is a cancer doctor. And it's all glowing about what your great pharmaceutical industry is doing to take care of you and your family. And it's got a publication from Big Pharma. But I tell you, the Inquirer is very happy to have multiple double pages paid for, as well as any other operation, and as any newspaper would be. And sometimes they are cautious. They don't irritate the city's largest auto dealer, because they need to keep auto ads in their paper. It's clear that money, there is no bigger spender and no bigger money than the pharmaceutical industry. So sometimes some papers, and trust me, many of them are on thin ice financially, and to upset someone that may advertise regularly in your paper might be an unwise thing to do. You might not want to cross them.
I don't want to interject the newspaper into this debate. We're not here for that. But Jillian asked me to make a real quick point that the decision we make in the editorial page is not influenced by advertising. We don't get any Big Pharma advertising. We'd love to get dollars from that. We don't. And there is a hard line between the opinion that's expressed on the editorial page and the news stories that appear in the local in the local coverage of what we do. Steve and I at the editorial board talk about things. They report the news, and we have different views. The editorial page's opinion, the news pages are news. And that's just the way we are, and I'm not going to get out of the debate. You guys continue to discuss.
I have a question. Last month at a debate in Cleveland, Dale made the comment that I picked up on completely. But it was near the end, he stated that roughly half of the drugs that Ohio might be buying under this deal are not even on the VA formulary, so they would not even be covered by this.
Yeah, so that's a very good question that I'm glad you raised. So remember, under Issue 2, Ohio could not pay more than the lowest price paid by the VA. Well, the question is, Ohio buys a lot of drugs that the VA doesn't. The VA formulary is relatively narrow because it's designed for military veterans who are overwhelmingly older and male. Medicaid, by contrast, serves a large proportion of the Medicaid population are women, children, infants, and so forth, who need a lot of drugs that are not on the VA formulary. Now, David and the yes side always say, oh, but there's 7,000 drugs in the VA formulary. That sounds like a lot until you realize that Medicaid alone buys over 44,000 drugs. So over half the drugs that one state program in Ohio, Medicaid, buys is not on the VA formulary. So what happens when Ohio buys drugs that are not on the VA formulary? Can we still buy those drugs? If so, for how much? We don't know, because Issue 2 doesn't say. It's another example of the sloppy wording. Now, sometimes I've heard, not David, but I've heard others say, oh, yeah, we could keep buying the drugs, but you just pay whatever you're currently paying for it. Well, if that's the case, then what happens to the savings? Because now there's no VA discount. There's no savings, right? So if you keep buying it at whatever price you're paying before, what happens to their savings? The point is, this is a poorly worded, sloppily worded ballot initiative that doesn't take into account the real world consequences of what would happen if this thing passed. And I will just conclude by saying this. I got 20 seconds left, so I'll conclude by saying this. The promise of Issue 2 has been from the beginning. It's going to lower drug costs for everybody, and it's going to save taxpayers hundreds of millions of dollars. We've already established it's not going to save everybody. People's drug prices are not going to go down for two-thirds of the state. The state budget director said it's not going to save money either. So why in the world would you vote for it, given all of the unintended consequences that it could bring in its wake?
Why indeed? Why would the pharmaceutical industry so aggressively be in Ohio when, according to their ads, let me get this straight, any of you business people, according to their ads, a yes vote for Issue 2 will increase the cost of drug prices. They're going to spend $80 million to defeat an issue that would raise the cost of drugs? Sounds counterproductive to me as a business person. If you have any doubt whatsoever about what this issue is really about, let's be clear. This is from farmexec.com, and it's an analysis in California last year. When I say California, insert Ohio, because here's the story, their own inside talk. Regardless, here's the point. If the voters of California approve this proposition, it would establish an incredibly deep mandatory discount, in essence a price control for the public purchase of prescription drugs in America's largest state. Such an action would no doubt cause an immediate demand for the same VA discount rate to be made available to other states. The federal government and likely private entities, your insurance, as well. In short, adoption of VA pricing by the state of California, read Ohio, would be pricing disaster for the entire drug industry. It is profit, no other reason, that they are here lying to you every night on television. It is profit that brought them to Ohio. It is profit that says don't dare put a leash on what we want to do. And it is those profits that are impacting negatively people all across America. We are being taken advantage of, and it is time to stand up and say enough. And Issue 2 is a chance, our first chance ever, to push back and say yes to lower drug prices.
David asked why the drug companies would be spending millions of dollars if this is not going to hurt them. Now, I said at the beginning, I speak for the campaign. I don't speak for the drug companies. But I'm going to hazard a couple of guesses as to why they might really want this thing to go down. Number one, the VA prices were supposed to be for military veterans in honor of their service and sacrifice. It was never intended to be extended to everybody, which is why the VA is opposed to this as well. What David didn't tell you is last year, when this was on the California ballot, the VA did an issue brief about what the impact would be on the VA if this passed in a place like California or the state of Ohio. And what the VA found is that the VA's drug costs would likely go up by nearly $4 billion a year, because those voluntary discounts that we talked about would go away. The last point I'm going to make is that David would tell you that, if prices go up, it's only because the greedy drug companies are going to do this to you. There's nothing in Issue 2 that says they have to raise prices. Ask yourself this. If you tell a company, any company, whether that company makes automobiles, drugs, or television sets, that they have to sell their product to a certain segment of the population at a low price, what happens to prices for everybody who's not covered under that edict? Cost shifting is a basic fact of economic life. It is not some scheme dreamed up by the evil drug companies. There's no such thing as a free lunch. Somebody always pays. And in this case, it's going to be the people of Ohio.
Gentlemen, before we proceed, we were agreeing 2 minutes on each question. So we were not in order here. You have an additional, just to keep things fair, 2 minutes for you. But remember that each question, each of you has 2 minutes only. Thank you.
The pricing at the VA is chosen as the model because it has worked well for 25 years. We keep hearing this, but we can't really model on that because we don't really know the prices. There's no transparency. There's no accountability. Well, you know, that's part of the problem. And how can any entity fairly negotiate when everything is a secret and everything is hidden? And half of these endorsers have some sort of backdoor deal, whether it's hospitals or anybody else. Anybody look at a hospital bill, you see the, what your bill is, and then there's a slash off for this, or slash off for that, and your insurance company, you know, takes a hook here. Give me a break. Just tell us the truth. Tell us what it really is. Pay what it really is, and be transparent about it. The VA discount was put in place. Why? Because the VA was being hammered by the drug companies. The Congress has been so fully purchased by drug manufacturers, largesse, and campaign contributions for decades that no wonder we can't get a federal solution, because no federal legislation will ever see the light of day, just like this DEA story that we're talking about today. The same thing has been going on. 25 years ago, they got caught sticking it hard to the VA. And the Congress people love veterans. They said, that is wrong. And they said, bad boys, slapped them on the hand and said, now you have to negotiate with the VA. We simply think that what is good for the VA is also good for Ohio taxpayers and, frankly, for taxpayers in the federal system and across America. It is time we regained some sanity.
Other questions? If someone has a question, please stand and ask.
I guess I'm having a bit of a problem with this. It sounds like it's all about, you know, trying to rein in the pharmaceutical companies, and yet nothing in this makes it to me sound like it's anything but let's make Ohio the sacrificial lamb that's going to try and get something started for the rest of the company. And in the meantime, I mean, I'm along with Dale. I don't remember your last name, sir. I call you Mister.
Yeah, good.
But there's nothing that's going to keep them from making their profit. So if they don't make it in one way, they're going to make it in the other. But so it becomes, does it matter whether we're paying it in taxes or we're paying it at the pharmacy? Because if we're not paying it in taxes, we're going to be all the rest of us are going to be paying higher prices at the pharmacy, and on top of that, we're going to have legal costs. It's not making sense that too much of this discussion has been about the pharmaceutical companies that this has no effect on,
right,
and not enough about the Ohio taxpayers and Ohio consumers.
Yeah. Let
me take a whack at that first. You just heard David talking about how, you know, the drug companies this, the drug companies that, the lack of transparency. Maybe that's all true, David, and you're welcome to try to change federal law. But issue two will not change federal law. And under Title 38 of the U.S. Code, and I can give you the section and the paragraph, that's where the confidentiality stuff comes in. That's federal law. So those prices cannot be revealed by either the VA or by the drug companies. If you'd like to change federal law, you're welcome to do it, but issue two would not. And as for the – that's why I say the action has to be at the congressional level, okay? And David's answer is, oh, that's never going to happen because the congressmen and senators aren't going to pass that. Well, if that's the case, then it seems to me the answer is to hire some new congressmen and senators. It's not to make Ohioans lab rats in some made-in-California experiment.
Well, you know, that's very nice with the gerrymandering and the idea that you instantly change Congress. Well, guess who is the biggest contributor to candidates? The pharmaceutical industry. Guess who has the most lobbyists in Congress? The pharmaceutical industry. 2,000 of them. Like three guys or women for every congressional member. How else could you turn the DEA upside down and stop investigating mass distribution of quantities to towns in West Virginia of 320 people sending 9 million OxyContin pills to that town, and no one wants to investigate? And the pharmaceutical industry is powerful enough with their congressional allies to derail that? And you know what's really sad? This monstrosity of a law went right through. Nobody even protested. Mitch McConnell got up, pushed it through. The Democrats pushed it through. And I'll be damned, Obama signed it. Who's paying attention? The tracks were greased by the money. The tracks were greased by the contributions. And that's the reason we'll never get a federal solution. And that's the reason that states and sometimes cities have to stand up. You say, well, that's a lawsuit or this is a guinea pig. Somebody has to stand up every time something changed in America. It started locally. It went local. It became larger in the state, and it impacted other states, and it impacted federal policy. That is Americanism, and by God, that is democracy. So I am happy to be a participant in democracy, but we can't take on all 500-and-something legislators simultaneously. We're trying to have a small universe where we can make change here that will spread like prairie wildfire.
Are there other questions from members of the audience? Yes.
So really, this is for either one of you. And I'm not supporting or opposing this legislation in this forum, but it seems to me that Mr. Weinstein is probably every bit as greedy and money-grubbing as any pharmaceutical CEO, and they all are. Every one of them is the same. But it seems to me that the majority of our problems probably are not lying in the hands of pharmaceutical companies, but probably more in our own self-responsibilities. It seems to me that if we get off our sofas and we exercise and we eat right and we stop smoking, that we're going to eliminate a lot of the need for the new drugs that are in research and development. And the majority of new drugs that I see coming out in the market are drugs that are largely not necessary if we do those things that we need to do as individuals. And the other point I want to make is that I know that a lot of people in the United States go to Canada for their medications, but there are also a lot of Canadians who are coming to the United States for their health care.
She just made a comment.
I have a question about the transparency. Since they said that the prices can't be any higher than what the VA pays, but that apparently the VA goes below what you know the prices are, some secret negotiation, how will we price match that, Sean?
The only thing we know for sure is that, as I said, what you know for sure, what everybody knows because it's in law, is that the VA gets a 24% mandated discount. We know because it's in law that Medicaid, which accounts for 75% of the drugs the state of Ohio buys, gets a 23.1%. What we don't know from either the VA or the state of Ohio is how much these additional discounts are. And by the way, one of the reasons that that's like that, it's not just true of drug companies. Let's say that you make aluminum siding, for example. And you have a builder or a developer who's going to buy a lot of that from you. He probably is going to give you a discount for a volume purchase that is a lot better than you or I could get if we walked into his store. But he doesn't publicly advertise that discount. He doesn't publicly say what it is. That's regarded as a private contract between him and the developer. The same is true here. And that's the reason for that confidentiality law. Now, again, you're welcome to try to get it changed, but Issue 2 would not change it. Issue 2 is a state law, not a federal law. Federal law supersedes state law. So Issue 2 would not change federal law, and we can't know what that lowest price is because of those voluntary discounts.
Well, I find your question quite interesting. And he just referenced an aluminum salesperson with a private contract. We're talking taxpayer dollars. We're talking public transparency. If The local town council tried to buy some of that aluminum and didn't tell you the details of the deal, you'd be screaming high heaven saying, why are you being unaccountable? Why do we not have transparency on purchases? I would suggest that every federal government and state government contract should be available for scrutiny. But the fact is this, that in Ohio, for instance, with the rise of the opioid crises and heroin addiction, we're seeing increased in hepatitis C. It's a terrible disease, but now they can fix it for three months. And in Ohio, how much does it cost? $90,000. Same treatment, same drug. Egypt, $1,000. India, $900. Why are you and why are the taxpayers of the state of Ohio subsidizing every other country in the world when it is the United States government and taxpayer dollars that funded the development of 25 out of the 26 top drugs in the United States? We're being had. If you can't see that, please vote no for issue two. But I'm advocating a yes vote because it is the first step that we can get in taking control of our own lives, our own economy, our own health care, because we should not be paying more than any other country in the world. In fact, since we developed it and since Fed's money paid for it, we should even be getting less cost than Canada or other countries. So why are we subsidizing the rest of the world? How would issue two affect that? Why is the pharmaceutical so terrified? If this is such a puny thing that they can't be enacted or will have no impact, why are they so terrified of its passage?
We will take two additional questions from members of the audience before concluding this question and answer part of the debate. Other questions?
One right here.
Okay.
Earlier you said that, and I don't know if it was half, what the percentage was, but let's say half the drugs Ohio buys are not in the veteran's formula. Well, isn't some savings better than no savings? I guess I'd like an answer to that question from both of you.
So the answer is some savings would be better than no savings, except nobody has looked at this, including the current state budget director, says there would be any savings. There will be no savings. That's what he said. I just showed you the Dayton Daily News headline. There is no savings. There's no savings because on Medicaid drugs, which, again, account for 75% of the drugs we buy, we're already paying equal to or better than the VA. The price we get is equal to or better than the cost for the VA. For the other drugs, he says, well, some savings are plausible, but he said it's unlikely to happen because, among other things, there would have to be administrative changes. You'd have to hire auditors. You'd have to hire accountants. This is what the state auditor says. This is not me. He says you would have to do all those things, and so whatever small savings might be there would be eaten up by those costs. And there's also the problem of the litigation costs that Ohio would probably have to foot the bill. That's what he also says is the other reason that there's not going to be any savings. So there will be no savings. And the last point I'm going to make with regard to what David said before about how there ought to be this transparency and how dare them at the federal level say that we can't know what this lowest price is. Well, David, I hate to have to tell you this, but it's also true in the state of Ohio. When Medicaid negotiates these additional discounts, those too are regarded as proprietary contracts and it's not public. You know what the state pays, but you don't know what the discounts are. That is what is proprietary, and neither Medicaid nor the drug companies can reveal that either. Now, maybe you'd like to put some sort of legislation in to change that, but it's not going to happen under issue two.
Well, it's unfortunate that the lack of accountability or transparency is so cavalierly shoved off. Like, guess what? You know, the really underlying this whole proposition is saying we're going to make you confused and we want you to just roll over and go back to sleep. Turn on the football. Ignore this public issue. Because we know if you're confused, you know what happens? If you're confused, you vote no. That's why you fight so hard on the yes versus no. Because the no campaign instantly has a 7 or 8 point mathematical advantage at the ballot. So you fight like heck to get that no. Trust me. And the idea that you're being told to stay confused and to just relax, that other people will take care of this, I think that is an insult to the democratic process. And being told that these are secrets that you're paying for, that you're not allowed to know the details of, that's a travesty.
We have time for one last question. Who would like to ask it?
Over here.
Yes.
I'd like to know if the state government have the agencies in place now, or will this create another big bureaucracy? Any savings there are going to be lost through government?
The state currently purchases all the drugs for retirees, for employees, for some state institutions, prison systems, but primarily this is really going to impact the increasing amount of money spent, once again, because of the opiate crises and what it's done to families and individuals, the cost of the Medicaid program. So all the drugs paid for by Medicaid, they would be negotiated by the directors of those different agencies when their contracts came up. And there would, if need be, there would be enabling legislation created by our legislature in Ohio. But there should not be any new entity needed to be set up or no additional individuals set up, because they negotiate contracts now. Now they would have teeth in the contracts as opposed to the raw deal we're getting.
Once again, Ohio is already negotiating drug prices. That's why we are already paying as good as or better than the VA for the drugs we buy. We are already negotiating. But in answer to your question, yes, there would be a new bureaucracy set up, because Issue 2 has no guidance of any kind with respect to implementation as to how this thing would actually be implemented. Now, the state budget director says, well, if this were to pass, yeah, you'd have to, you know, these other state programs would have to hire accountants, they'd have to hire auditors, they'd have to hire all these different people. The point is, you're going to have bureaucratic infighting, you're going to have delays, you're going to have a morass of red tape. This is going to be costly, to say nothing of the lawsuits. So I would say to you again, if any of the promises of the Issue 2 proponents were true, if this were actually going to save money for people and their drug costs, or if it were going to save money for taxpayers, there might be some rationale for voting for it. But both those things have completely fallen apart. We know that since two-thirds of the population are not covered, your drug costs will not go down by a single penny, but they could go up thanks to the cost shifting. The state budget director last week said there will be no savings to the state. So the twin promises turn out to be false.
Is that it? Okay.
We will now give each of our speakers 2 minutes for their closing statements.
Well, I suspect that even after this debate, many of you may still be confused. Which campaign is telling the truth, and who should you believe? Well, let me suggest that instead of trusting either campaign, maybe you should listen to those you already trust. For some of you, that's probably your own doctors, nurses, pharmacists, and hospitals. If so, you should know that every medical organization in Ohio says Issue 2 would hurt you and your families. Others of you may look to policy experts for advice, like former state budget and Medicaid directors who have actually bought the drugs and run the programs that Issue 2 would so greatly affect.
Well, everyone who's actually been in charge of these programs under the last four Ohio governors says issue two is a bad idea that won't work. Or maybe, as I said earlier, you rely on your hometown newspaper to ferret out the truth. Now, as we've heard, the Findlay Courier has yet to take a position. But, as I said before, every major newspaper in the state that has taken a position is recommending a no vote. So whether you trust policy experts, medical professionals, or your local newspaper, what they all have in common is their opposition to issue two. So maybe the real question you should ask yourselves is, who's more likely to have your best interest at heart? Ohioans that you know and trust, or a California CEO who wants you to pay his attorney fees? Please think very carefully before you vote. There is a lot at stake.
Well, you know, I think that suggestion that we just heard to listen to Ohioans that you can trust and what they have to say, then let's go back to a time when that old adage, the shoe was on the other foot. I'll tell you what, I'm a consistent person in my beliefs, what I say, and what I do. I would not be here if I did not believe that this was sound public policy. My opponent here tonight, when he was working against the pharmaceutical industry some years back, is quoted in the Cincinnati Enquirer. What does he say about these issues back then when he was not on this tab and this entire campaign 100% funded by Big Pharma? Well, so what did he say back then? Quote, pharma, and he even uses that word, and the big drug companies will do anything to try to preserve what they regard as their right to gouge consumers and to stall meaningful relief for average people. Imagine that. This particular ploy is put forward in an attempt to give the impression that they're concerned with affordable prescription drugs. But in fact, they're not. I believe he spoke the truth then, and I believe I'm speaking the truth tonight, and I'm asking you for a yes vote on issue two. Thank you.
The chairwoman has allowed me, as a point of personal privilege, when you're attacked by name.
I quoted you just the same way the gentleman at the City Club is quoted in a public forum.
Yes,
this is a public document, a newspaper.
And let me say that as that 15-year-old quote demonstrates, I've been involved in the fight for affordable prescription drugs for most of my adult life. And unlike issue two, which won't help anybody, that 2003 AFL-CIO ballot initiative that I was involved with back then resulted in the creation of Ohio's best RX discount card. If you're old enough to have a Golden Buckeye card, turn it over on the back. It's still in effect. It's still bringing help and hope to tens of thousands of Ohioans. And I'll tell you one other difference between the thing I was involved with in issue two. We didn't leave out two out of every three Ohioans, and we didn't ask Ohio taxpayers to pay millions of dollars in attorney fees for a California attorney and his lawyers.
Well, I guess this could go on all night, you know, but I was supposed to have the closing remark, which I made, and I quoted fairly, I quoted accurately, and those sentiments should stand, and regardless of what else was said following that, I stand by that statement. I'll leave it where it is, but
Thank
I still
you.
Encourage your vote on yes on issue two.
Thank you to both of our speakers for presenting their views. I don't think there's any doubt in any of our minds as to where each of our speakers stands on this issue. But most of all, thank you to you, members of the audience, for your involvement, for coming this evening, and for having the opportunity to hear these positions. This will conclude this part of the evening's festivities. We have refreshments if anyone wishes. And again, we thank you very much for coming. And certainly, AAUW, WFIN, and the Courier want to encourage you to cast your ballot, cast your vote, and make your voice heard. Thank you all for coming, and have a safe trip home.
WFIN and WFIN.com. Thank you for joining us for tonight's Issue 2 Community Forum. Tonight's event was sponsored by The Courier, WFIN Radio, and the Findlay branch of the American Association of University Women of Ohio. The preceding has been a special presentation of 1330 WFIN and WFIN.com.
Get the national and world news with ABC and statewide coverage from the Ohio News Network, plus local and regional news with Doug Jenkins in the WFIN newsroom. This is your news authority, 1330 WFIN.